Osho, The Dhammapada, The Way of the Buddha, Volume 10, Discourse Number 12.
The first question. Bhagwan, I am an uneducated man. Can I still become enlightened? John, there is more possibility for you than for an educated man. The education that exists in the world is not true education. True education will be a help towards enlightenment because it will make you more meditative, more silent, more aware, more inward looking. The education that exists in the world makes you more ambitious, outward looking, more egoistic, more superficial. It gives you all kinds of wrong values. It is a kind of poisoning. It does not help you in any way to be yourself. It is destructive. It helps you to be somebody else. And that's its very destructive foundation. It is poisoning, but so slow that you never become aware. It begins the day you are born, and it goes on slowly, slowly destroying you, distracting you from your nature. By the time you come out of the university, you are no more a natural being. You are artificial, arbitrary. Universities are like factories, assembly lines, where man is destroyed and machines are created, where man is reduced into a machine. And enlightenment means discovering your being. It has nothing to do with education. In fact, those who are educated, they will have to become in a certain sense uneducated again. Those who are knowledgeable, they will have to cease to be knowledgeable. They will have to become again childlike, innocent, so their eyes can be full of wonder, surprise. So they can again see the tremendous beauty of existence, the eternal joy, the celebration that surrounds you. But the knowledgeable person is absolutely unaware. Because he thinks he knows, that is his barrier. The more you know, the less you are surprised by anything. The more you know, the less you wonder. And God is only for those whose wonder is total, who know the experience of being in awe. Those who can dance with the wind and the sun and the rain, those who, seeing a rose flower, are so struck by its beauty that they become speechless, that for a moment their mind stops functioning. Only those few can know God. Only those few can become enlightened. John, you are fortunate. Of course, if you are educated, you will be able to earn more money, but not more meditation. You will be able to have more political powers, because you will be more cunning, more clever. But not inside in your own being. You may be able to possess many things, but that will be only a deception. In fact, things will possess you, because you will not be your own master. It is better to possess one's own being than possessing the whole world. It is better to be a Buddha, a beggar, than to be Alexander the Great. Because Buddha lives a full life and dies a full death, and Alexander the Great lives an empty life, hollow, somehow stuffing it in an effort to convince himself that he is not empty, and then dies utterly empty. When he died, he said to his generals that, "Let my hands hang out of my coffin." Why, they asked? Because that is not the way to carry a dead body. He said, "That may not be conventional, but I would like that my hands should hang out of my coffin, so people can see that I am dying empty-handed." That's how his body was carried. Millions of people had gathered to see. And everybody was wondering why his hands are hanging out. And slowly, slowly, the rumors went around that Alexander wanted it to be known by everybody that he is going empty-handed. His life has been utterly futile. John, nothing to be worried about education, knowledge. In the inner world, the ordinary education is not needed. Something else, a true education. The word education is beautiful. It means drawing something out. Drawing out that which is within you. In fact, we should not use it for the ordinary education. It is wrong to use a beautiful word like education for this rotten system of schools, colleges and universities. It is not education in the literal sense even. Because instead of drying out that is within you, it forces things from the outside upon you. It is an imposition. Real education is like drying water from a well. Not pouring something into the well. Real education is drying out your being so that your inner luminosity starts filtering through your body, through your behaviors. I am reminded of a beautiful story. It really happened. It is not just a story. Stas, a new immigrant, got off a boat at Ellis Island and set about finding himself a job. Door-to-door inquiries brought no luck until he rang the bell of a whorehouse. The madam was sympathetic and implored him to clean up the basement. After completing the task in record time, Stas asked for further work, whereupon the madam suggested that he become their permanent bookkeeper. When Stas explained that he could neither read nor write, the madam paid him 10 cents and sent him off on his way with her best wishes. With the 10 cents, Stas brought 2 apples in the market. He ate one and sold the other in the town center for 10 cents. He returned to the market and bought 2 more apples, which he sold again for 10 cents each. Increasing his business this way, he eventually became the owner of a small fruit wagon, then several fruit wagons, then a small fruit store, then a supermarket, and finally a chain of supermarkets. When several of the giant national food chains offered to buy him out, he accepted the highest bid, $7.5 million. The contracts were drawn up, and the corporate executive and his staff, surrounded by a large number of attorneys, met in the Plus corporate offices atop one of Manhattan's most prestigious skyscrapers. The contracts were looked over, heads were nodded, and finally the executive signed on the relevant dotted line. Then Stas picked up the solid gold pen and laboriously scrawled his X at the bottom of the page. The corporate executive leaped up from his chair and shouted, "My God, man, you mean to say you have amassed this business worth $7.5 million without being able to read or write?" "Hell," snorted Stas emphatically. "If Stas could read or write, Stas would still be a bookkeeper in a whorehouse." The second question. Bhagwan, what is mechanical goodness? Gina Goetz "There is nothing like mechanical goodness. Goodness cannot be mechanical, and mechanicality cannot be good. It is a contradiction in terms. Goodness can only be conscious, non-mechanical, and evil can only be unconscious, mechanical. But I understand your question. It is relevant, because for centuries something like mechanical goodness have been taught to people. because it is easy. People are mechanical. To bring real goodness in their life, real virtue, you will have to transform their unconsciousness into consciousness. You will have to change their darkness into light. And that is an arduous effort. And the society, moreover, is not interested in it at all. In fact, it is afraid of it. Because whenever a really good person has happened in the world, he has created trouble for the society. A Jesus, a Lao Tzu, a Buddha, a Kabir. These are the greatest rebels, for the simple reason that they were so conscious that they could see through the whole stupid game that we go and play. They could see through our lies. They could see through our deceptions. It was impossible to deceive them. And it was impossible to exploit them. And it was impossible to enslave them. Not only that it was impossible to enslave them, they created great movements of consciousness in the world. They created chains. They triggered chains. Many, many people became enlightened through their efforts. Their efforts were thought to be antisocial. That's why Jesus is crucified. Where can you find a man who is more good than Jesus? What is his crime? His crime is that he is really good. If he was only mechanically good, there would have been no trouble. There were many rabbis mechanically good. The society is not afraid of mechanical people. They are manageable. They are dependent on the society. They always live with the collective. They are always following the crowd. The crowd is very happy with these people. And it is easy to create mechanical goodness. Because in the first place people are mechanical. You have just to replace their evil ideas with good ideas, not changing at all their being. For example, hell was created, the idea of hell, to create mechanical goodness. People are afraid. People live in fear. Priests became aware of it in the very beginning of humanity, that it can be exploited, make them more afraid. They depicted hell in such detail. They created so much fear in people that people became conditioned out of fear. It is the same type of conditioning that can be done now in easier ways because we have more developed technology. There is no need to teach 25 years the idea of hell, then a person becomes mechanically good. Now you can ask Pavlov, Skinner and other behaviorists. They can teach you simple methods. Just electric shocks will do. Somebody smokes and you don't want him to smoke. Just give him electric shocks. Whenever he smokes, let him have an electric shock. Within 3 days, he will drop smoking. Because the moment he will take a cigarette in his hand, he will start trembling. He will become so much afraid that now the shock is coming. That's how they teach rats, they teach monkeys and chimpanzees, and that's how they are trying to teach human beings. Religious people created hell, politicians created prisons just to torture people. If you torture enough, people become accustomed. Pavlov calls it conditioned reflex. He worked his whole life with dogs. He conditioned his dogs. If you bring food before a dog, of course, it affects his saliva. He starts salivating. His tongue starts hanging out. Saliva starts dripping. Seeing delicious food, it is natural. But if you ring a bell, it won't happen. There is no connection between bell and saliva glands. Pavlov did one thing. Whenever he will give food to his dogs, he will ring a bell. Whenever he will ring a bell, he will give food to the dogs. The bell and the food became associated, linked, hooked with each other. After 15 days, he just rang the bell and the dogs started salivating and their tongues hanging out. Now there is no natural connection between the bell and the tongue, but a new unnatural connection has been created. Pavlov became the founder of communist psychology. That's how in Soviet Russia, in China and other communist countries, people are being conditioned. They don't think that man is any different from dogs. Maybe a little developed, a little more complicated, but is still a dog. Skinner goes on working on rats and goes on finding how to condition rats, and he says the same is applicable to human beings. You just create fear and then they will not do certain things, and you create greed. That's why paradise, heaven were created. These are simple strategies of dominating people. Create fear for that which you want people not to do, and create the idea of reward for that which you want them to do. And you have created a mechanical behavior. They will not do the bad and they will do the good. But what kind of good is this? It is exploitation by the society, by the church, by the state, by the vested interests. It has not changed the being of the man. It has not made him more aware, alert, more joyous, more celebrating. It has not given him any taste of bliss. It has not opened any window for him from where he can have a little glimpse of God. I don't call it goodness, virtue. My idea of virtue is, it should be a byproduct of consciousness. You should become so conscious that you can't do wrong, not because you are conditioned, but because you can see it is wrong. For example, I was born in a Jaina family. Now Jainas are the most fanatic vegetarians in the world. In my house, even tomatoes were not allowed because of their redness. It reminds you of meat and blood. Even poor tomatoes, so innocent, in my childhood, the very idea of somebody eating meat was enough to make me sick. In my family, there was no possibility to eat in the night. Jainas don't eat in the night. Who wants to suffer in hell just for eating in the night? When I was 18 years old, for the first time I ate in the night. It was so much against my whole background, but I had to, because we had gone for a picnic and all the other boys were Hindus and they were not interested the whole day to prepare food. And I don't know even how to prepare tea. So I had to depend on them. I told them many times, but they were not interested. They were interested in exploring the mountains we had gone to, the fort, very ancient fort and the statues, and there were many things. And the day was tiring, and by the evening we were utterly tired. Then they started cooking food. The food was ready in the night, tired, hungry, and the delicious food that they were preparing, and the aroma. And I was the only one who was in such a suffering. I cannot eat because just one night's question and you suffer in hell for eternity. But I was wavering naturally. On the surface I was keeping calm and cool as I was supposed to, but they were persuading me. And deep down I was ready to be persuaded. In fact, I was hoping that they should be able to persuade me. And finally they persuaded. And I ate. But I have never suffered so much. The whole night I was sick and vomiting. Nobody else was vomiting. Nobody else was sick. It was just my conditioning. Now this kind of vegetarianism is not good. It does not come out of your consciousness. It is mechanical. Mechanical goodness is not real goodness. It is just a facade. intelligence is needed to be good. Awareness is needed to be good. The unshaven and booze-smelling Pollock was arrested for public drunkenness, and now he stood in front of the judge. "Your Honor," he pleaded, "I honestly did not mean to drink a whole quart of vodka at one time." "Then why did you do it?" demanded the judge. "I lost the cork." A contractor working for the US government in Vietnam submitted a bill for the tiling of a roof. The government office was astonished at the total of over $20,000, most of it for medical expenses incurred on the job. A lieutenant was dispatched to the hospital to investigate. This was the contractor's explanation. "At the outset of the job, I attached a pulley to the edge of the roof and ran a rope through it. To one end I attached a large barrel, the other end I tied to a stake in the ground. I then filled the barrel half full with tiles, untied the rope, hoisted the barrel up to the roof, retied the rope to the stake, climbed up the ladder, unloaded the tiles on the roof, lowered the barrel, climbed down the ladder, and repeated this process several times until all the tiles were on the roof. Early in the evening, the job was completed, and I began loading the unused tiles into the barrel. I had overestimated the number of tiles needed, and so had a full barrel of extras. I climbed down the ladder and unhooked the rope. It was then that I realized my error. The barrel, now full of tiles, was heavier than I, and began descending. In my shock, I forgot to let go. Up I went. Halfway up, the barrel and I met, breaking my right hip. I continued up, breaking several fingers and one hand as I hit the edge of the roof. Meanwhile, the barrel hit the ground, tipped over, and spilled out most of the tiles. The barrel, now lighter than I, came back up. I descended. Halfway down, we met again. This time, my ribs were crushed. When I hit the ground, my left leg was broken. It was at this time that I had the presence of mind to let go of the rope. A few seconds later, the barrel landed on my head, giving me concussion. More intelligence is needed. More awareness is needed. And then life becomes naturally good, spontaneously good. The third question. Bhagwan, I am homosexual. I feel terribly oppressed and stricken by the stigma of homosexuality. It seems false to me to come here to find a way to come closer to myself and at the same time not to have the courage to show myself the way I am. Then I want to resign and return home so that I don't have to think about it any longer. What can I do? Steph Hinn. There is nothing wrong in being homosexual. You need not feel guilty about it. One certainly has to go beyond sex, but that is as much applicable to heterosexuality as it is applicable to homosexuality. heterosexuality or homosexuality are just styles of the same stupidity. You need not feel guilty. In fact, looking at the population of the world, homosexuality should be supported. At least you will not increasing the population of the world. You will not be loading the earth more. It is already loaded too much. Homosexuality should be valued, respected. It is pure fun. Heterosexuality is dangerous. And what is wrong if two persons are enjoying each other's body? Nothing is wrong. It should be their concern, nobody else's business to interfere. But the society is continuously interfering in everything. It does not leave anybody any privacy. It enters in your bedroom too. Your society is not a free society. It talks of freedom and democracy and all that rot, but it is pure slavery. It is a big prison. And your priests and your so-called God are all peeping Toms. They are all looking into your private lives, what you are doing. It should be nobody's business. What is wrong in loving a man or a woman? Two men can love each other, two women can love each other. Love is a value in itself. And fun should not be condemned. Life is already such a burden, such a drag, such a boredom. Leave at least something in life so people can feel a little less bored. Here you need not feel afraid to show yourself the way you are. My whole approach is to help you to be the way you are. Because that is the only way to help you transcend it. Feel guilty and you will remain the same. Guilt never transforms anybody. And homosexuality is such an innocent phenomenon. Why it is so much condemned? The reason is that if it is not condemned, the fear is that almost everybody will turn homosexual. Because every child has the tendency. Every child passes through the stage when he is homosexual. Every boy, every girl passes through a time when boys like boys and girls like girls. The fear is that if many people turn homosexual, particularly in the past, when the population was not big and every society wanted more numbers, because numbers meant power. To allow homosexuality was dangerous. It had to be condemned, absolutely condemned. So much so that in few countries it is the greatest crime. For example, in Ayatollah Khomeini's country, Iran, it is one of the greatest crimes. You can be sentenced for your whole life, or you can even be sentenced to death just for being homosexual. It seems absolutely absurd, ridiculous. But in the past there was some reason in it. Every society wanted to be more powerful. It was a constant struggle. A struggle between groups, a struggle between tribes, a struggle between clans, who succeeds. And the only thing deciding was your number, how many you are. If people become homosexual, the numbers will decrease. Hence, it has to be condemned as the greatest sin. It may have some meaning if you think of the past, but in the present it is absolutely meaningless. In fact, the whole situation has become just the opposite. Now heterosexuality is the danger. Less numbers are needed. If this way humanity goes on growing, then we cannot support humanity. We cannot live any longer. By the end of this century, the population will be so much, the poverty will be so much, that there seems to be no way out except a third world war, which will kill almost everybody, so that few people can start the whole story again. I have heard a story, a 21st century story. The third world war has happened, and a monk is sitting on a rock taking a sun bath, and a female monkey comes with an apple and gives the apple to the monkey, and the monkey says, "My God, are we going to start it all over again?" Homosexuality is condemned because there is every possibility, if it is not condemned, that many more people will turn towards it. The inner tendency is there in every person. In fact, the person who is against it, the more he is against it, the more he has the tendency. Deep down unconscious, he knows it is there. To repress it, he has to be very much against it. He feels disgusted by the very idea. But nobody is telling him to become homosexual. But if others feel attracted, then it is not your business to interfere or to condemn them. It is their freedom. And they are not doing any harm to anybody. It is a harmless game. Stupid, certainly, but not a sin. But as far as stupidity is concerned, all sex is stupid. For the simple reason, because it is a biological urge, and you are not the master of it. You are just a victim. And you need not be so much worried about it, Hain, because homosexuality has a very beautiful origin. It originated in the monasteries. It is something religious. The first homosexuals were monks and nuns. Christian, Buddhist, Jaina, all great religions have contributed their share into it. It was bound to be so, because there are monasteries even now in existence where no woman has ever entered. In a Catholic monastery in Europe, in Mount Athos, for 1,000 years, no woman has entered. Not even a 6-month-old girl has been allowed to enter then. What kind of people are living there? 6-month-old girl. And they are afraid even of that. What can they do? But repressing sex creates fear. So the whole monastery is full of men, and homosexuality is a natural byproduct. If only boys are together, or only girls are together. Religious people have contributed greatly. Educationists have contributed greatly, because boys have to be educated separately, and they have to reside into different hostels especially for them. And girls have to stay aloof in separate hostels, in separate schools. If you put too many girls together, they are bound to become lesbians. Because when the sexual urge takes possession of them and they cannot find the boy, then anything is better than nothing. In zoos, even animals turn homosexual. Only in zoos, remember. In their wild state, they don't become homosexual. There is no need. Females are available. But in a zoo, if females are not available, they become homosexual. A zoo is worth studying. I used to study, because the zoo gives you many indications about human society. The human society is a big zoo, because everything has become so unnatural. Go to a zoo and watch the animals, and you will be able to see many things. They become homosexuals. They never become homosexuals in their wild stage. They are forced to become homosexuals. They go crazy. They become insane, mad. In wild states, they never become insane. No animal ever becomes mad in his wild state. He remains sane. But his sanity needs a little freedom. A lion has a big territory in the wild state, miles of territory, and he is the king of the whole territory. And in a zoo, he is in a small cage. If you go to the zoo, you will see the lion walking up and down the cage, up and down the whole day. It can drive anybody mad. He needs freedom. He needs a certain territory. In such a small space, he is overcrowded. He becomes angry, enraged, violent. Many diseases never happen in the wild. For example, no animal suffers from tuberculosis or cancer. But in a zoo, animals suffer from tuberculosis and cancer. It's strange. Because in the wild state, there is no medical facilities for them. And in the zoo, every kind of medical facility is available. Doctors are there to look after them. Great doctors doing something great. What they cannot manage on their own, cancer, tuberculosis, doctors help them. And animals become victims of illnesses which they have not known ever. Human society has been so much forced to live in unnatural circumstances. And monastery is one of the most unnatural circumstances. It is a zoo, a religious zoo. Homosexuality was born there. So you need not feel very bad about it. You are a religious person. And you have a great line of homosexuals. If you look for homosexuals, you will be surprised. Many poets, many authors, many painters, many musicians, many dancers, many great people, many creative people were homosexuals. Many Nobel Prize winners have been homosexuals. And don't be worried about enlightenment either, because at least one homosexual I know has become enlightened. Socrates. He was a homosexual. And there are suspicions about Jesus. I cannot prove it. They are only suspicions. Because he moved with the boys always. Those 12 apostles, who knows? But if he was, nothing is wrong in it. Socrates was certainly a homosexual. Plato was. Aristotle was. Greeks are great people. One American girl was going to marry a Greek. The mother was very much worried. She said, "Wait, if you can avoid this marriage." The girl was mad. She said, "No. She looks so beautiful, just like a Greek god." The mother said, "I know. Just only after a few days you will know. He is nothing but a goddamned Greek." And one thing more, the mother said, "If you marry this man, then remember one thing. Never turn your back towards him. Never." Whatsoever happens, sleep on your back the whole night. The girl got married. She insisted, and soon she found the mother was right. The Greek god was nothing but a goddamned Greek. And she was also puzzled, because he was always trying to tell her that, "Why don't you turn?" But she won't turn. She was also stubborn. After 6 months, all efforts failed. The Greek said, "Listen, if you don't turn, you are not going to have children ever." Then the girl had to turn, because she wanted children. The Greek played a logical trick. Greeks have been homosexuals for centuries. They are all great people have been homosexuals. So you need not worry, you have a great history behind you. Walt Whitman was a homosexual, one of the greatest poets of all the ages. There seems to be something in homosexuality that it makes people creative. Or creative people are homosexuals. There is something in it. And I can see where is the point. When you stop creating children, your creativity takes new turns, new dimensions. You create poetry, you create painting. And the people who have been condemning homosexuality for ages are also condemning for one thing more. Because as far as man-woman relationship is concerned, it is always on the rocks. Because man cannot understand the mind of the woman. The woman cannot understand the mind of man. They are poles apart. That's their attraction, but that's also their conflict, constant conflict. If homosexuality is allowed, accepted, the fear is many people will settle into homosexuality, because the man can understand the other man more easily. They have the same mind, and the women can understand each other more easily. They have the same mind. That's why homosexuals are called gay people. They are really gay. The heterosexuals look so sad. Whenever you see a couple, you can immediately know whether they are married or not. If they are sad, they are married. If they are looking dull and dead, they are married.
Marriage kills all joy. For the simple reason because it creates so many conflicts. Hence all the societies have condemned it. For the simple reason because if it is not condemned, what will happen to reproduction? In the past it had some meaning, but now it has no meaning. Now the day has come when homosexuality can be accepted, should be accepted as a natural outlet of your sexual energies. I am not against it. I am not for it either. I am simply saying that if you have to live your sex, you can choose your style. You are free to choose your style. If you decide to be stupid, at least you should be given the freedom. What kind of stupid you want to be? I give you total freedom. My effort here is to help you to go beyond it. So, if you are homosexual, you have to go beyond homosexuality. If you are heterosexual, you have to go beyond heterosexuality. And there are other people also who are neither, who are auto-erotic, auto-sexual. They have to go beyond their auto-eroticism. Man has to transcend sex, whatsoever kind sex it is. Because unless you go beyond your biology, you will never know your soul. But meanwhile, before you go beyond, it is your freedom to be whatsoever you want to be. You say, I am homosexual, I feel terribly oppressed and stricken by the stigma of homosexuality. There is no need to feel terribly oppressed. You must be accepting people's condemnation. Deep down somewhere, you are also against it. Otherwise, why feel oppressed? If people are against, let them be against. You need not declare to everybody that you are a homosexual. You need not move with a flag that you are a homosexual. You can remain a homosexual. Of course, you cannot hide it because your sex style changes your body language. The way the homosexual walks is totally different from the heterosexual. The way he talks is totally different. And he looks so gay, so happy. So you will have to keep a little less happy, that's all. Don't look so happy. And walk a little more consciously. That's all. Don't feel oppressed and don't feel stricken by the stigma of homosexuality. That is all nonsense. And you say, it seems false to me to come here to find a way to come closer to myself and at the same time not to have the courage to show myself the way I am. What courage you are talking about? Here there is no question of courage. If you are homosexual, you are homosexual. It is not a courage here to declare. Here you can write on your shirt that I am a homosexual. Nobody will take any note of it. People will say, so what? This is a totally different world. Here we accept all kinds of people, sane, insane, crazy. We have no objection. Unless you start harming others, we have no objection. And homosexuality is a harmless game, absolutely harmless. But you think that this is courageous, that you are declaring that you are a homosexual. Here it is not. Anywhere else it will be. And I will not suggest that you declare anywhere else. There is no need. Why brag about it? Accept it silently. Relax into it. But you wanted to say it because it is boiling within you. Don't be worried what others say. Just look within yourself what you are saying to your own homosexuality. You are not at ease with it. The society has corrupted you, contaminated you. The society has given you ideas. It has created a certain conscience in you. And that conscience is pricking, continuously feeling hurt. Now you say, then I want to resign and return home so that I don't have to think about it any longer. Just by going back home, you will not be getting rid of it. Neither you will get rid of homosexuality, nor you will get rid of the stigma or the feeling of being oppressed. You will have to drop your conscience that has been created by the society in you. You will have to understand yourself and clean yourself with all imposed ideas by others. Only then you will be able to relax. You ask me, what can I do? Hint. Don't make a problem out of it. Nothing has to be done about it. I don't tackle individual problems. My whole approach is that there are millions of diseases, but there is only one cure, and that cure is meditation. You meditate. Homosexual, heterosexual, bisexual. You meditate. You become more still and more silent. You create inner emptiness. You become more transparent. And then things will start changing. You will be able to see what you are doing to yourself. And if it is right, you will go on doing it with more joy, with more totality, with more intensity, with more passion. And if it is wrong, it will simply drop, just like dead leaves falling from a tree. So I cannot suggest any specific method, because to me all the problems are arising because we have become minds and we have forgotten that deep down there is a space within us which can be called no mind. Entering that space, no mind, will give you perspective, vision, clarity. Meditate. Sit silently watching your thoughts. homosexual, heterosexual, whatsoever they are. It doesn't matter. You watch. You become the witness. Slowly, slowly, a distance will be created between you and your thoughts. And one day, suddenly, the realization that you are not your mind. And that day, a revolution has happened within you. After that day, you will never be the same again. A transcendence has happened. After that, whatsoever you do is right. You can't do wrong then. And before that, whatsoever you do is wrong. So when I say I have nothing against homosexuality, I am not supporting it, remember. I am not saying be homosexual. I don't have anything against heterosexuality either. But I am not supporting heterosexuality. I am not supporting anything. These are all mind games. And you have to go beyond all the games. Your mind is created by the society. 15-year-old Bobby was running out of a theater where he had just seen a porno movie. The manager stopped him. "Why are you in such a hurry?" "My mother told me," said Bobby, "that if I ever looked at anything bad, I would turn to stone, and I have started." Two members of London's exclusive Explorers Club were discussing a mutual friend over large brandy and sodas. "Well, I will be damned," said the first old boy. "You say Parkhurst has gone to Africa and married an ape?" "Quite so, old man." There was a pause, and the first clubman asked in a discreet tone, "A female ape, naturally." "Of course," came the reply. "There is nothing queer about old Parkhurst." The mind functions as an agent of the society within you. To go beyond mind is to go beyond society. To go beyond mind is to go beyond the whole history. To go beyond mind is to go beyond past. To go beyond mind is to enter into God. And then whatsoever happens is good, is virtue. The fourth question. Bhagwan, the West seems to be obsessed with sex. People are stuffed with endless techniques and porno images. Why in all this time are people still stuck and unable to move into the tantric experience of sex, of love and of life? Prem Karin, it is not a question of West or East. Both are obsessed with sex, of course, in different ways. The West is indulgent. The East is repressive. But the obsession is the same. And one should ask a very significant question. Why the West is so much indulgent? It is 2000 years of Christianity and its repressive methods that have brought this indulgence. The East is repressive. Sooner or later it is going to become indulgent. The mind of man moves like a pendulum from the right to the left, from the left to the right. And remember, while the pendulum is moving to the right, it is gaining momentum to move to the left, and vice versa. It appears it is going to the left, but it is gaining momentum, energy, to go to the right. When a society is repressive, it is gaining momentum to become indulgent. And when a society is indulgent, it is gaining momentum again to become repressive. So a strange thing is bound to happen. In fact, it is happening. The West has been indulgent for few decades, and the repressive trend is arising again. There are many cults which preach celibacy now. The Hare Krishna movement preaches celibacy, brahmacharya, and thousands of people have become interested in it. And there are many cults arising which are all agreed on one point, that sex has to be repressed. In the name of yoga, in the name of Zen, in the name of Christianity, many cults are arising which are again repressive. The West will become repressive soon. And in the East, the porno magazines are growing every day. The porno movies are coming more and more. East is a little slow in everything, a little lazy in everything, so it takes a little longer time. West moves with his speed. But the East is becoming West, and the West is becoming East. And that is one of the greatest problems. If this happens, then the misery remains the same. Again the pendulum has moved, and again you will go on doing the same things. This has happened many times in the past. A repressive society becomes indulgent sooner or later. When the repression comes to a point where you cannot repress it anymore, it explodes. People go berserk. Or when a society has been very indulgent, it starts seeing the futility of it. The sheer wastage of energy. And it gives no contentment. Rather, it makes one feel more and more frustrated. Then one starts thinking of brahmacharya, celibacy. Maybe the ancient rishis were right. In the East also it has happened many times. The Hindu religion in the beginning was very indulgent. It was not a repressive religion. The Hindu seers were married people. Not only they were married, they were allowed to have few other women also as their second-rate wives. They were allowed even to purchase women, because in those days in India, men and women were sold in the marketplaces just like any commodity. Beware of all those people who go on talking about the golden age of India. There has never been any golden age. Even in the days of Rama, Hindus talk very much. Rama Rajya, the kingdom of Ram, is thought to be the highest pinnacle, and people were sold like commodities in the marketplaces, particularly women, were just thought to be property. Anybody can sell, anybody can purchase. People used to give them as gifts. A guest will come to your house and he would like one of your women, and you would present the woman to him. Even the so-called saints used to have many women. They were all indulgent. All the stories of those days, even about gods, are very indulgent. You must have seen Shiva temples, temples devoted to God Shiva. And the statue is nothing but a phallic symbol. If you look, if you observe minutely, you will be surprised. It has both man, woman, sexual organs in it. It depicts the meeting of man and woman. And the story is, one day Vishnu and Brahma went to see Shiva. This is the Hindu Trinity. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Brahma is the creator God. Vishnu is the maintainer God. And Shiva is the destroyer God. All the three are needed to keep the world running. One creates, one maintains, one destroys. Then again one creates, the other maintains, and the third one destroys. So it remains in a flow. Brahma and Vishnu went to see Shiva. And as it happens, the god was fast asleep. So they entered in without asking any permission. And Shiva was making love to his wife Parvati. And he was so passionately in it, so drunk. May have taken some drug, because he is perfectly well known to have used drugs. Marijuana and hash and opium, all were known to him. He continued to make love. And these two gods stood there watching. Great gods. They could not even say, "Excuse us," and get out. They must have enjoyed the scene. Living pornography. 6 hours it continued, the love making. And these two gods stood there 6 hours watching a long blue film and nothing else, just making love. No other incidents, nothing else, just Shiva making love to his wife. But they were very angry. When Shiva was finished, they told him that we have been waiting for 6 hours and you have not even taken any note of us. We are very angry and we curse you that you will be remembered forever and forever by our sexual organs. That's why in the Shiva temple you see the phallic symbol. Shiva is remembered by his sexual organ. Now these Hindus must have been very indulgent. Their gods too were very indulgent. But then came a reaction. The pendulum moved. Buddhism and Jainism rebelled against this indulgence. And they created a very repressive world, a repressive morality. India still lives under that influence, but it is moving slowly, slowly, again towards the indulgent. The West is influencing it. Western films, Western novels are influencing it. The West is being influenced by Buddha, by Zen, by Patanjali, by yoga, by meditation. And the East is influenced by Playboy. People are reading Playboy, hiding it inside their Gitas. Prem Karin, you asked, the West seems to be obsessed with sex. It is not true only about West. The whole humanity up to now has remained obsessed with sex. And it is going to remain unless we change the whole gestalt. Up to now the gestalt has been repression, indulgence. Indulgence, repression. Go on moving between these two. We have to stop exactly in the middle. Have you tried ever to stop the pendulum of a clock in the middle? What happens? The clock stops. The time stops. That's my effort here. I don't want you to be indulgent and I don't want you to be repressive. I would like you to be balanced, just in the middle. It is in the middle that transcendence is possible. And it is in the middle that we can create a humanity which will be neither Eastern nor Western. And it is immensely needed, urgently needed, that a man comes on the earth which is neither Eastern nor Western. A new kind of man, with a new vision, freed of all the bondage of the past. You ask me why in all this time are people still stuck and unable to move into the tantric experience of sex, of love and of life. Tantric experience means neither to be repressive nor to be indulgent. Tantric experience is possible only if you move deep into meditation, otherwise not. When you become very, very still, silent, aware, alert, then only it is possible that you will know something of Tantra. Otherwise, Tantra can also become an excuse for indulgence, a new name, a religious name, and you can move into indulgence behind the name of Tantra. Names won't make much change. Your being needs change. Zilda, the Hebrew zebra, was walking down a country lane, someplace in the boondocks of Pennsylvania. Soon she came upon a flock of sheep. "You who? May I speak to you, please?" she called out. One of the sheep came up to the fence. "No. What do you want to speak about?" "I represent the Hadza Zebra Association of South Africa. You are Jeevis?" "Ah, yes. We are all Jeevis here." "Well, I am on a fact-finding tour. Our zebras are interested in learning how Jeevis animals in America earn a living. Would you mind telling me what kind of work you do?" "What do I do?" exclaimed the sheep. "What kind of a question is that? I give wool. What else? Every year they shear it off and next season they do the same thing. Is it any different there in South Africa?" "Ah, no, it is just the same. Well, I must be running along. Tata. And thank you most kindly." Zilda continued on her fact-finding mission until she met a cow. "Excuse me, madam. I am from the Hadza Zebra Association of South Africa. I am interviewing Jeevis American domestic animals. Would you be so kind as to describe your work?" "Glad to," murmured the cow. "I am employed by a strictly kosher dairy, being orthodox myself, of course. My work, you ask? Well, I am a purebred Guernsey and I give grade A milk. I live up there in that pretty white barn. Sorry, I can't ask you in, but we were not expecting company and the place is a mess." "That's perfectly all right. Thank you for your information. You have been most helpful. Toodaloo." A short time later, Zilda saw a stallion in a pasture and there was no mistaking his Jeevisness. He happened to see her at just about the same moment. He charged toward the fence, skidded to a four-footed stop and loomed over the zebra with nostrils flaring. "And just what is it that you do, sir?" asked the zebra demurely. "Honey, you just slip out of those fancy pajamas," he said, "and I will show you what I do." The whole humanity is suffering from obsession, either through indulgence or through repression. The whole humanity is concerned 24 hours with sex. Psychologists have discovered that every man thinks of women at least once within 3 minutes. And every woman thinks of man at least once in 6 minutes. That may cause enough problems. The difference, that may be the whole trouble between man and woman. tantric sex is not sex at all. It is meditation. Meditation has to spread all over your life. Whatsoever you do, do meditatively. Walk meditatively. Eat meditatively. If you are making love, make love meditatively. Meditation has to become your 24-hour life. Then only the transformation. Then you go beyond sex, you go beyond body, you go beyond mind. And for the first time you become aware of godliness, of ecstasy, of bliss, of truth, of liberation. The last question. Bhagwan, why are the Indians such a proud people? Paul, God knows. They have no reason to be. I am also surprised. There is nothing. But the ego clings to anything, or it invents something. India goes on inventing a beautiful past. It is invention, pure invention. It has never been there. It has never existed. Yes, there have been people like Krishna and Mahavira and Buddha. But they are not Indians at all. Jesus is not Jewish. And Lao Tzu is not Chinese. These people are universal. Nobody can claim them. The whole earth belongs to them. They are our common heritage. So you cannot brag about them. But every country has to invent something to feel good. Just as individuals need egos, countries need egos. Races need egos. Religions need egos. And Indians have a tremendously big ego. They think they are the most spiritual people on the earth. And that is just bullshit. The very idea is unspiritual. To be spiritual means to be humble. To be spiritual means to be nobodies. To be spiritual means not to belong to any country, to any nation. To be spiritual means not to be Hindu, not to be Mohammedan, not to be Christian. But even spirituality is being used as a prop. It happens every day. Some new Indians come once in a while. Those who don't understand me, because it is not possible to understand me just if you come once as a visitor, just to see around. You can't understand me if you come as a tourist. Indians come, but they come only as visitors. And few Indians who have become absorbed into my commune, who have become sannyasins, I don't count them as Indians anymore. They have become universal. It is a universal brotherhood. But when new Indians come, they are Indians, very much Indians. And what egos they carry. When I pass around the Buddha Hall with my hands joined together, with my head bowed down to them in love, in prayers, in salutation, they can't even respond. They sit like stones. Not even a formal gesture they can show. They look so silly, so stupid, and I feel so sorry. How to help them? These people seem to be beyond help, beyond approach. And they see the whole ocean of sannyasins with their hands joined together, joyously bowing, responding in love, communing. But they can't do it. They just sit there like dead rocks. Strange, but not so strange, because deep down they think they already know. Deep down they think they are great inheritors of a spiritual tradition. They know the Vedas and the Gita and the Upanishads. I watch them. I watch their spirituality. They don't look at me. They look at my Rolls Royce. That's why I have asked Sila to bring a Rolls Royce. At least for Indians, there must be something to see. They are more interested in the car. And they are spiritual people, not materialists. When they come to see the ashram, the first question they ask to the guides here is, where is the Rolls? They are not interested in seeing meditations. They are not interested in seeing Sufi dancers. They are not interested in seeing Vipassana. They are not interested in anything. Where is the Rolls? Their whole mind is materialistic. But they go on pretending to be spiritual. and you can always invent something or other. The country is poor, so they cannot brag about richness. The country is uneducated, they cannot brag about education. The country is technologically backward, they cannot brag about technology. So they have fallen upon something invisible, spirituality. You can always brag about spirituality. Nobody can disprove it. Of course, you cannot prove it either. But one thing good about spirituality is it cannot be disproved. So you can go on talking about your spirituality, which exists nowhere, which has never existed. Individuals have been spiritual beings. Societies have never been. We have still to wait for that great day when there will be so many individuals awakened that the society will start having the color of spirituality. Up to now, it has not happened. Hitherto, it has not been happened. It has been only a hope. But every religion believes that they are religious. Just believing into certain ideas gives you a false feeling of being religious. And whenever you come across a real religious person, you shrink back. You become afraid. Hence they are against me. They are bound to be against me. I am shattering all their structures. I am shattering their whole egoistic patterns. I am trying to bring them down to the earth, to the reality. And it hurts. India has never been against anybody as India is against me. For the simple reason that nobody has ever shattered their egos. I'm making every possible effort to shatter their egos, because that is the only hope. If India loses its ego, there is a possibility of a rebirth. The country can be reborn. It has great potential. It has the same potential as when you don't use a field for many, many years. You don't grow any crop, and the field becomes more and more potential every year. For centuries, India has not grown any creativity. It has become the most potential country in the world. If it explodes into creativity, it is really going to be something great. Something of great consequence to the whole earth. But before it can ever happen, the cell of the seed has to be settled, has to be broken. I am going to be condemned, criticized, rejected. That is bound to be my destiny. But I am the only hope. If I succeed in helping few intelligent Indians to come out of their closed egos into the open, that will help not only India but the whole world. It will be a great contribution to the growth of consciousness. It is possible.
and you are all here to help it happen. Enough for today.